box as I tried to describe the chocolate to her. "It was dark chocolate," I said, but even as I said this, I wondered if it was right. Had it been milk chocolate? I had been so focused on not tasting the hazelnut, I wasn't entirely sure. "I think milk or white would have been better," she said. "But you'd have real trouble if it were baking chocolate. That's the most dangerous. Dogs can't process caffeine or theobromine like we can. I get this call a few times a week. Their systems just overload."
"Okay,"
Clark said, running back into the room, holding the pieces of the box in his hands.
"It was 10 ounces dark chocolate."
"And he ate all of it?" Ashley asked, her voice getting sharper.
"All but a few pieces," Clark said, meeting my eye. "What does that mean?"
There was a tiny pause, and Ashley said, "I think you'll be okay, but you're going to need to get this out of his system. You're going to need to get him to throw up."
"Oh, he's been doing quite a lot of that," Clark said.
"That's a good thing," Ashley said. "He's basically been poisoned, and he needs to clear it out." "So we don't need to take him to a vet?" I asked, surprised. I'd assumed that the professionals were going to take over at some point. I hadn't thought this was going to be left to us. "You're going to need to monitor him for the rest of the night," she said. "If he starts seizing, you'll have to bring him to a vet immediately. But otherwise, based on his weight, I don't think he ate enough for this to be truly life-threatening."
"Oh, thank God,"
Clark murmured, sitting back and running a hand over his face. "But you need to get him to drink fluids so he doesn't become dehydrated," she said. "And keep watch on him tonight. If the shaking gets worse, bring him in."
"Got it," I said, looking over at Birdie.
"Thank you."
"Thanks a lot,"
Clark said, leaning forward slightly to reach the phone. Ashley said goodbye and a moment later hung up. And then it was just me and Clark, and the sudden silence that filled the room now that Ashley was no longer telling us what to do.
"So," Clark said, looking at the dog, then back at me. "Now what?"
Since it seemed like Birdie wanted to be in the laundry room, we got settled in there. Clark went to clean up the kitchen, and though I offered to help, I was secretly glad when he insisted on doing it himself. Not only was I not thrilled with the idea of cleaning up the mess in the kitchen, but after talking to Ashley, I really didn't want to leave Birdie alone. While on one hand, I was relieved that he didn't seem to be in any serious, immediate danger, the fact that he had come so close to it was terrifying, as was the fact that Clark and I were the ones responsible for making sure he stayed out of it. Birdie tried to kick the blanket off, and I took it off of him, running my hand over his back. I set it down just to the side of him, in case we needed to have it on hand. I was about to call to Clark to see if he could bring out Birdie's water dish when my phone rang. The caller ID read Maya, and I picked up immediately.
"Hi,"
I said, beyond relieved to hear from her. Maybe she and Dave were on their way over, and they would take over the dog night watch. I knew neither of them were vets, but they had way more experience with dogs than Clark and I had combined.
"Hi,"
Maya said, and I could hear she sounded like she did when she was trying to wrangle her pack of dogs away from an aggressive barker. Stressed, but trying to hide it with cheerfulness.
"I'm so glad you picked up. I just heard from Clark. It sounds like he's having a problem with Birdie."
"Yeah," I said, cutting her off before she could tell me what I already knew. "He called me. I'm over there now."
"Thank goodness."
"Told you,"
I heard another voice say. After a moment, I realized it was Dave. I'd only met him once, when I'd gone to their tiny office to drop off my tax and payroll forms. I'd expected the male version of Maya. Tattoos, cheerfulness, dyed hair, and had met someone who looked like he could have been an investment banker,
except for the spare leashes clipped to his belt with the carabiner. I knew Andy would have this under control. Hi, Andy. Hi, Dave, I said, realizing that I must be on speaker in a car. I could hear both of them clearly, as well as the occasional car horn passing by. What's the situation? Maya asked. I took a breath and filled them in, ending with what Ashley had told us, that someone needed to sit up with Birdie all night. So, I said when I'd finished, waiting for either one of them to jump in and tell me they were on their way, that I could go home. Here's the thing, Maya said. We're up in New Hampshire visiting Dave's mother, who hates me. She doesn't hate you, Dave interrupted, and I could hear a sigh somewhere in his voice, like they'd had this discussion a few times before. She just doesn't understand the tattoos. I did suggest that maybe you could have worn a cardigan. Anyway, Maya went on, more loudly than before. We weren't planning to leave until tomorrow, and even if we left now, which would really not go over well, Dave muttered, we couldn't get there for 4 hours. So, now it was Maya's turn to trail off. And I had a feeling I knew exactly what she was asking. I can stay, I said, after only the slightest hesitation. I knew I wouldn't be able to leave Clark alone with Birdie without worrying the whole time that something had happened to him. And if Maya and Dave weren't going to be here, I seemed to be the only option. Oh, thank you, Maya said, relieved. Andy, you're the best. I'll make sure you get overtime for this. It's okay, I said, glancing over at the dog and rubbing his ears. I could sit here tonight with Birdie. It wouldn't be that bad. And you and Clark get along, right? Maya said, not really asking it like a question. So you guys will be okay. Well, I started, then realized that Maya and Dave, and whoever else might be in the car with them, didn't really need to know that we'd just had a disastrous date. Sure, I finally said. It's fine. And I'll keep my cell on all night, she said. So call any time, even if it's 4 a.m. Wait, what? I heard Dave ask sharply. Are you walking anyone tomorrow? Maya continued over him. Just one walk. Clyde, Sheriff, and Coco. I'll get it covered for you so you can sleep, Maya said. And thank you again. Call if there's a problem. I will, I said, as Dave and Maya both shouted goodbyes over increasing static. Bye, I replied, but I wasn't sure they could still hear me, and a moment later I heard the dial tone in my ear. Hey. I looked up to see Clark standing in the doorway, wearing khaki shorts and a dark red t-shirt. His hair looked wet, and I could see comb tracks through it. Sorry that took so long, he said, as he crossed the room toward us. I was pretty disgusting after cleaning up, so I took a quick shower. I nodded, trying not to get distracted by the way he smelled, like some combination of ivory soap, fresh towels, and mint gum. Clark, in his more casual clothes, was making me all that much more aware that I was still in the dress, now ridiculously creased, that I'd worn for our date. So, Dave and Maya called, I said, making myself look away from him. I tried to focus on the dog. His eyes were still closed, and he was breathing heavily. They're in New Hampshire, but they said to call if we need help. Oh, Clark said, his face falling. He adjusted his glasses. So, okay. He looked down at Birdie and twisted his hands together, and I could see how scared he was at the thought of staying here alone with him. But I can stay, I said, making my voice light and easy, like this was no big deal. You know, so we can take shifts. Relief passed over Clark's face immediately, before it was replaced by something closer to worry.
"Are you sure?"
he asked.
"I hate to ask you to do that."
"You didn't," I said. "I offered." A moment later, though, I suddenly worried that he didn't want me there. It would make sense. Who wants to keep hanging out with someone they had a bad date with? Especially when there's no possibility of kissing at the end of it. "But if you don't want me to," I started haltingly. "I mean..."
"No, no,"
Clark said so quickly that I knew he wanted me to stay. Probably his panic at being left alone with Birdie was overriding any awkwardness about spending more time with me.
"It would be great if you could stay. I mean, if you don't mind."
"Not at all." Even as I said it, I was wondering what I was doing. I pushed myself to standing carefully, pulling my dress down. "I'm just going to get his water dish."
"Great,"
Clark said, nodding, then looking at the dog.
"I'll keep an eye on him."
I headed toward the kitchen, unlocking my phone as I walked. I started to compose a text to my dad, letting him know what was happening. "I had a work emergency. Sick dog needs to be watched over tonight. Will be home in AM. When my phone beeped with an incoming text. "Bree." "Andy, you okay? Why did you need a vet? What's happening? We're about to take off here. Should we wait?" "Palmer, where even are you? We thought you'd be back by now." "Me. Dog sickness emergency. So I'm at Clark's. Definitely not coming back tonight." "Toby. Dog, boy, nervous face, nervous face." "Palmer. I'm sorry, Toby. What was that?" "Toby. Dog, boy." "Bree. Yeah, I'm not sure I entirely understood what you were trying to convey there." "Toby. Weary face. Neutral face. Angry face. Pouting face. Furious face." I shook my head as I looked at the texts, wondering if Toby was, like me, becoming aware of how hard this was going to be to keep up all summer. "Me. Guys, stop messing with her. Gotta go, I'll text tomorrow." "Palmer. Send updates." "Bree. Seconded." "Toby. Thumbs up. Telephone receiver, cell phone, telephone, praying hands." "Palmer. Didn't quite get your meaning there, T." I smiled as I dropped my phone back in my pocket, knowing this might go on for a while. I picked up Birdie's water dish, filled it with fresh water, and then dropped in a few ice cubes, in case that made it more appealing. Then, carrying it carefully, I walked back to the laundry room. Clark was sitting cross-legged next to Birdie, patting his head every few seconds. "Any change?" I asked as I set the water bowl down in front of the dog. Birdie raised his head slightly, glanced at the water, then closed his eyes again. Clark shook his head.
"The same," he said. "But he's not shaking anymore, so that's a good sign, I think."
I nodded as I sat down on Birdie's other side, tucking my legs beneath me and smoothing my dress down. I met Clark's eye over Birdie's head, and then we both looked away again. I told myself firmly that it would be fine as I ran my hand over the hair on the dog's back. We could just watch the dog. It wasn't like we had to talk or anything. It turns out there's only so long you can sit in silence and stare at a sick dog. And that amount of time is apparently 20 minutes. "So," I said, when I absolutely, positively couldn't stand the silence for a moment longer. "You're from Colorado?" Clark looked at me over Birdie and gave me a half smile, the kind you give when you're being polite, not because you're happy about something. I looked in vain for the dimples, but it seemed they only emerged for the real thing.
"I am," he said. He didn't say anything else,
And as silence fell again, I took a breath to ask a follow-up. I really didn't even care what it was. I'd see who could recite all the state capitals faster. I just couldn't take the quiet anymore. But before I could say anything, Clark went on. I was born in Steamboat Springs, but when I was 11, we moved way out to the country, almost to the Wyoming border. That must have been cool, I said. I was pretty sure I'd been to Colorado once. I had vague recollections of a whitewater rafting trip from when I was little. But when I thought of the state, it was vague images culled from movies and magazines of endless blue skies, snow-capped mountains, fields of green. Clark shrugged as he ran his hand over Bertie's head. In some ways, he said after a moment. He looked up at me and smiled quickly, a more genuine smile this time. I got to run around in the woods a lot. That was pretty great, because that's basically all you want to do when you're 11. I must have looked skeptical at that, because Clark's smile widened. Well, if you're me. But it also got a little lonely. My sister was the only other kid for 50 miles. Is that... I started, remembering something he'd said in the foyer, which now seemed like a million years ago and not earlier that night. When you were homeschooled? Yep, he said. Sixth grade onward. I nodded, trying to get my head around that. I couldn't imagine life without school. Without my friends, without teachers, without all the daily drama that went along with it. It really wasn't so bad, he said with a laugh, and I realized, startled, that he'd been able to see what I was thinking. I got to read a lot, and I was basically done with high school by the time I was 14. But I started to ask why anyone would want to do that, then paused when I realized I didn't know the polite way to ask this question. I mean, was there a reason you guys moved? Clark nodded. My dad wanted some peace and quiet, he said. He wanted a place where he could focus on his work, uninterrupted. What does he do? Clark's smile faltered a little. He's an accountant, he said. He looked down at Bertie and patted his head. An accountant who wanted to be a novelist. There was something in his voice that I recognized. A way of letting me know I was getting close to something tender, something he didn't want to talk about. I was a little surprised. He hadn't seemed to understand this when I'd tried to give him the same sign at the restaurant, and he was the one who'd been disappointed when we hadn't talked about things that were real. But I looked a little closer and saw the tightness in his smile, the way his forehead was creasing, and realized that everyone, no matter what they might want to think, has things they don't want to talk about. So I nodded and let silence fall again. But it no longer felt oppressive and horrible like it had before. Now it felt like a pause in a longer conversation. Did you ever have a dog? Clark asked me after a few minutes of watching Bertie. Both of us jumping at the slightest of movements. He seemed to be okay, as far as I could tell. He wasn't drinking his water, but he also wasn't moaning in pain or shaking violently. Or do you? I shook my head. No, on both counts. I reached forward and scratched Bertie's ears, and his tail gave a small, weak thump. I always wanted one when I was little, but... I stopped short. Even though this was just a small, simple fact, the act of saying it somehow felt scary, like I was dipping a toe into a pond I wasn't really sure I wanted to go into. My mom was allergic, I said, all at once, like I was ripping off a Band-Aid. Clark nodded, and I held my breath. Wondering if he was going to ask a follow-up question, willing him to somehow know not to. My parents are cat people, he said, looking back down at the dog again as I let out my breath. We always had at least three, and for some reason they always seemed to hate me.
That's like my friend Bree's cat, I said, shaking my head. In fact, the last time I slept over at her house...
I paused and looked over at Clark, wondering if I should go on. After all, maybe he'd just been making idle conversation, not wanting to share stories. Maybe he didn't really want to hear about the unspeakable things Miss Cupcakes had done to my pillow. But he was looking at me, expectant, waiting. So I took a breath and told him the story.
"Okay, here's what it says,"
Clark said as he came back into the laundry room, carrying a thin silver laptop, his face lit with the glow from the screen. We'd spent the last 15 minutes trying to get Birdie to drink, without success, and I was getting increasingly worried that he was going to get dehydrated. I saw that there was something on the front of Clark's laptop, some kind of sticker. But before I could get a closer look, he was sitting next to me and holding the laptop out so that it was between us.
"They say you can put fruit in the water, or ice cubes."
"Tried that," I said, looking down at the bowl where the ice cubes I'd put in there had long since melted.
"Or chicken broth works too," he said, scrolling down the page.
He looked at me and adjusted his glasses.
"I know there's no fruit in the kitchen because I'm the one who buys the groceries."
"Chicken soup?" I asked, looking over at the dog who seemed to be moving his head as far away from the bowl as possible.
"Maybe."
Clark shut the laptop, then pulled it toward him before I could get a look at the sticker.
"Want to check?"
We walked into the kitchen, after setting up a video call between our phones and placing one in front of Birdie, so that we could see if there was any change in him. And I was relieved to see that, in addition to it being cleaner, the smell from before was almost totally gone. The windows were open, and I could hear the sound of wind and cicadas through them. Clark went around opening up cabinets and peering inside, and I pulled open the fridge for no reason other than because I was curious what was in there. I realized I wasn't that surprised by the boy-bought groceries as I looked in. There was a takeout pizza box, a pack of cold cuts, and a bottle of ketchup. And that was about it, except for a six-pack of Coke.
"Feel free to take anything,"
Clark said over his shoulder as he opened up a cabinet.
"I know there's not much in there."
"You shouldn't have gone to Alberto's," I said, closing the fridge door. "Captain Pizza is way better."
"Good to know," Clark nodded. "I think I just called the first place that came up."
"Any soup?"
"Chicken rice." He held up a can. "Think that'll work?"
"Probably." I figured that if the dog had already ingested enough chocolate to make him sick, he probably wasn't going to be super picky about his soup flavors.
"Okay."
Clark put his laptop on the counter and bent down to open up a cabinet underneath the sink.
"So, if you were a can opener, where would you be?"
I was only half listening, though. I was looking at the sticker on his laptop. It was one of those thin decals that stick right on, so you can still see the silver underneath. I'd seen them before, of course. Tom had a Kermit the Frog on his laptop, and Bree's younger sister Sonia had the Giving Tree. But I'd never seen this one before. It took me a moment to even figure out what I was seeing. There was what looked like a castle on a hill, with a very tall spire. Birds circled around the tower, the biggest ones at the corners of the laptop, then getting smaller as they got closer to it. Leaning out one window was a girl with a long braid. She was reaching her hand out to a bird, who was aiming for her, claws extended. I just stared at it, trying to figure out if I was missing something here.
"Andy?"
My head snapped up, and I could see Clark looking at me, an open can of soup in his hand. Clearly, at some point, he'd located a can opener.
"Yeah,"
I blinked at him. It was clear he'd asked me a question, one that I hadn't heard at all. What was that?
I was asking if you think we should heat this up, he said.
I don't know. Do dogs ever eat hot food?
Well, I stalled, not entirely sure myself.
Maybe just warm it. Clark nodded and stepped behind me to open a cabinet and pull down a bowl. All the dishes I saw inside it before the door shut again seemed to be white.
So, what is this? I asked, nodding down at the laptop as Clark poured the soup into a bowl and headed for the microwave.
My laptop? He asked, sounding distracted as he punched the buttons and, with a beep, the microwave lit up and the bowl started turning around.
The sticker. I looked down at it again, hoping it wasn't something totally obvious that I was failing to get.
Oh, he said, just as the microwave beeped again. He pulled out the bowl of soup and brought it quickly over to the counter, dropping it rather than putting it down.
Hot, he said, shaking out his hands.
We might need to wait a sec before giving it to Bert. He ran his hand over the sticker quickly, a small smile appearing on his face.
It's... a reader of mine makes them. He sent one to me, and I liked it, so I stuck it on. I guess I was hoping it would give me some inspiration or something.
I nodded, like this was normal, to hear someone my age talking about their readers.
So, what is it?
Oh, Clark said, and adjusted his glasses quickly. He tilted his head slightly to the side, like he was trying to figure something out.
You're not... I assume you haven't read them.
I shook my head.
I don't really read, you know, books.
Clark's eyebrows flew up, and it was like he took a step back from me, even though I was pretty sure his feet didn't actually move.
I know how to read, I said, seeing the alarm in his expression.
I just don't love fiction, you know, novels.
If you don't love fiction novels, Clark said, and even though I tried to fight it, I could feel a smile tugging at the corners of my mouth. What do you read?
He shook his head, and it was like I could practically feel how baffled he was.
Wait, I'm sorry, but how do you not read books? Like, what do you do on planes?
I study, I said with a shrug. Or watch movies. Clark blinked at me.
I've never met anyone who didn't read before, he said.
Okay, I said, starting to get annoyed. I read. I have a 4.0. He was still just staring at me, so I explained. That's a thing we have in high schools with more than two people. It's called a grade point average.
Touché,
Clark said. And though he still looked rattled, he was smiling.
Okay, so if you haven't read my books, or, any books, I rolled my eyes at that even as I was trying not to smile. It's showing the main character from the first two books, Tamsin, and these are the Crows of Castleroy.
Oh, I said, nodding like that had explained anything. I looked down at it for a moment. Wondering what that must be like, to create something that someone liked so much, they made laptop stickers for you. Clark dipped a finger into the soup and nodded at me as he tasted it.
It's cool enough, I think.
Then he made a face.
And not really very good.
Does it need some Carolina Reapers? I asked, surprising myself. And Clark, too, judging by the expression on his face.
Couldn't hurt, he said, as I grabbed my phone and he led the way back into the laundry room.
5 minutes later, I looked up at Clark over Bertie's head.
I think it's working, I said in a half-whisper, like the dog could understand me.
Clark met my eye and nodded, and then I looked back at the dog. When we'd put the soup in front of him, he had opened one eye and sniffed toward it, but then had closed his eyes and put his head down again, which had made me get really, really scared. Bertie always lunged for his food bowl when I brought him home. To see him ignoring food was pretty much the only indication I needed of how sick this dog was. Fear was making my stomach clench as I realized we really might need to bring him to the emergency vet. But before I could say anything, Clark, to my surprise, had stroked Bertie's head while moving the bowl closer, so that it was right under his nose.
"Hey, bud," he said softly. "Look, it's people food."
There was a pause in which I held my breath, worried that this was the turn that the poison control lady had warned us about. But then, Bertie raised his head slightly, nose twitching. He sniffed at the soup for a few more seconds before starting to eat. Cautiously at first, but then with more appetite. And I finally let myself breathe again.
"I think you're right," Clark said,
as Bertie finished the bowl, nudging it around with his nose, trying to get more.
"Should I heat up the rest?"
"Maybe give it a second." Bertie looked up at me, and I reached forward to scratch his ears. "You did so good," I said, leaning closer to him. "Good." But I didn't get to finish that thought, because right then, Bertie opened his mouth and threw up chicken soup and chocolate all over me.
"Okay,"
Clark said, arriving in the doorway of the laundry room, breathing hard.
"So I think you're all set. You're..."
He pointed behind him, leaning slightly on the doorframe for support while he caught his breath.
"Sorry."
He shook his head.
"I was trying to hurry."
"It's appreciated." I was trying my best not to inhale. Bertie, after tossing his cookies all over me, had gone back to sleep, while I'd frozen, not wanting to move or breathe. Clark had scrambled to his feet and gotten me a towel, but it soon became clear that the towel could only do so much, and that I really needed to change, and probably needed to shower, since my hair had not been spared. I'd told Clark this, and only after I'd said it did I wonder if this was weird, to ask to shower at a guy's house. But then I figured we'd gone so far beyond anything normal tonight that I no longer cared. And more than worrying if it was weird, I needed to not be covered in dog puke. Clark had gone off to get me a change of clothes, and I'd looked at the sleeping dog, wondering just how much Maya's overtime was going to be, and if it would come close to making up for this.
"So, my room's down the hall," he said, pointing. "Second door on the left. There's a bathroom in there, and I put out a fresh towel and a change of clothes."
"Oh," I said. Somehow I'd figured that in a house this big, he'd direct me to a guest bathroom somewhere. I hadn't thought I'd be in Clark's room. Not that it mattered. It didn't mean anything, after all. I was only doing this because I had to. I got up, trying very hard not to look at what had happened to one of my favorite dresses. I would see if I could work a laundry miracle tomorrow when I got home. "Great. I'll be right back." I walked down the hall as fast as I could, careful not to touch anything on my way. Even the wallpaper looked expensive. Subtly patterned and edged in what looked like gold. I tried to casually glance into the other rooms I passed as I walked, but the doors were firmly closed, and I knew this was not the time to go snooping around. I found Clark's room right away. It was the only door that was open, light spilling out from it into the darker hallway, and stepped inside, pulling the door closed behind me. I knew this wasn't really Clark's room, just the room he was staying in for the summer. But even so, The genericness of it took me by surprise. This seemed like it was probably normally a guest room, since there were almost no personal touches. Just a queen-size bed with a cream coverlet, a gray couch in the corner, and a desk tucked under an eave. I started to let my eyes roam around the room, but looked down, remembered the situation at hand, and made a beeline for the bathroom. 10 minutes later, I'd washed my hair and was confident I no longer smelled like horrible things. I wrapped myself in the towel Clark had left out for me, neatly folded, and walked out to his room. I'd balled up my dress and stuffed it into a plastic bag I'd found underneath the sink, trying not to think about the fact that I'd been worried a few hours earlier that it had gotten wrinkled on the drive to the restaurant. I saw that, at the foot of the bed, there were a pair of sweatpants and a t-shirt laid out. The sweatpants were gray and fit well enough, thanks to the drawstring waist. The t-shirt was a dark blue, and across the front, in typewriter font, it read, "Ask me about the luminosity." I just looked at it for a moment, then gave up trying to figure it out and pulled it on. I knew I should probably head right back out to help with Birdie, but I'd taken a quick shower, and I figured I probably had a few minutes cover before my absence seemed suspicious. I told myself I wasn't going to snoop or look through anything. I had a deep aversion to that, ever since I had returned from the bathroom during an interview 2 years ago to see the reporter poking through my bag. But I told myself it couldn't hurt to just look around. It didn't take me long to realize that this was different from the guys' rooms I'd been in before. Usually, there was a lumpy, hastily made bed, a pile of stuff in the corner, and clothes tossed around. Even Topher, who was pretty neat, had a room that was just a little in disarray, like he was always kicking off his shoes and tossing off his jacket, leaving someone else to deal with them. Clark's room wasn't like that. There was a neat stack of books on the desk, a few thick fantasy books, but most of them seemed to be nonfiction, with titles like Breaking the Block, Jumpstart Your Imagination, Moving Beyond Writer's Block, and Resisting Resistance. I glanced away from them quickly, feeling like I'd seen something that I probably shouldn't have seen. Through the open closet door, I could see 3 shirts hung up, and on top of the dresser, a neatly folded pile of laundry, tilting slightly to the right. The only thing that was slightly messy were 2 button-down shirts that were laid out on top of the dresser. I couldn't help but wonder if Clark, like me, had gone through several outfits trying to find the right one for our date. I turned away, ready to leave his room. I really didn't want to be in there any longer. It wasn't that I felt like I was invading his privacy. It felt like the opposite. Like it was invading in on me, showing me a side of Clark that I felt like I shouldn't be seeing. Not yet, or maybe never. I never really wanted to know these things about the guys I'd dated, their fears and insecurities. I didn't want to know that Clark had spent time worrying and getting ready for our date. And I didn't want to ask myself why the sight of his neatly folded t-shirts was making me feel something I didn't even have words to express. I was almost to the door when something on an end table caught my eye. It was a picture in a small silver frame, showing a little boy, around 5 or 6, sitting on the shoulders of someone who was probably his dad. At first, I assumed that it was a picture that belonged to the house, family or friends of the couple in all the pictures downstairs. But, as I looked at it for another moment, I realized it was Clark. He looked basically the same, just without the glasses. The man, his dad, I was guessing, based on their resemblance, was looking up at him and smiling, while young Clark, mid-laugh, stretched his hands up to the sky like he was trying to touch the stars. I caught my eyes reflected back to me in the glass, and suddenly realized what I was doing. I turned off the light and closed the door firmly behind me as I went. I walked back to the laundry room, tugging at the hem of the shirt, feeling weirdly exposed, even though the sweatpants and t-shirt covered more than my dress had.
"Hey," Clark said, giving me a quick smile. "Are the clothes okay?"
"Fine," I said, nodding, wanting to change the subject. I tucked my wet hair behind my ears, wondering why it suddenly felt like I had my armor down. That like this, in his clothes, without my makeup, and with my hair sopping wet, Clark could see more of me than I wanted him to.
"How's he been?" I asked as I looked at the dog, who appeared not to have moved since I'd been gone.
"The same," Clark said, patting his back gently. "I got him to drink a little more, but didn't give him any more of the soup. I didn't think we should risk it."
"Probably wise," I said, as I crossed over to sit on the other side of Birdie, and then, just to be safe, moved a few inches farther away.
"So, no change?" I asked, picking up my phone and pulling up the internet, ready to go over the dangerous symptoms once again.
"Wait," Clark said, starting to reach toward me, but not before I realized that I had actually picked up his phone, and on his screen, I was looking at the last page he'd had open. I blinked as I stared at it. My dad's official portrait looked back at me from his Wikipedia page.
"Sorry," Clark said, and I could hear the embarrassment in his voice.
I nodded. I knew I should give him his phone back, but I kept looking down at the screen, at my dad's factual information. I was there, under the personal life section. Daughter, Alexandra Molly Walker, 17. Wife, Molly Jane Walker, deceased.
"So, did you learn anything?" I asked, looking at the photo at the top of the page.
It was the one that always seemed to accompany any article about my dad, though I had a feeling it might soon be replaced by the press conference on our porch. It was a picture of my dad taken 5 years ago. He was wearing a dark suit, and the president walked next to him. On the other side was Governor Laughlin. You could see me, a few steps behind him, in a black dress, my hair pulled back with a black velvet headband that had made my head feel like it was on the verge of exploding. I'd never worn it again after that day. The picture had been taken by the press that were waiting on the steps of the church after my mother's funeral, and it had made the front page of the New York Times above the fold the next day. It was hailed by pundits and journalists as a seminal moment, a return to decency. People reaching across the aisle, even in the middle of a campaign, putting aside differences in times of crisis, etc. It was seen by almost everyone as a symbol, and almost nobody who talked about the picture mentioned my mother, except in passing, like her funeral was just the setting for this larger, more important moment. It was the way her whole funeral had felt, like it actually wasn't about her at all. I watched as her friends and her students looked around at the Secret Service agents, at the president, and crumpled up the pieces of paper they'd brought with them, looking doubtful, not wanting to get up and talk about my mom, talk about who she'd really been in front of the leader of the country. And so there hadn't been any great or silly or funny stories about her. The words that were said could have been said about anyone, and the whole thing felt wrong, like I was letting her down. Like we all were.
"Sorry," Clark said, still sounding embarrassed, and I started to feel bad.
I closed out of the screen and handed him his phone back as he slid mine over the carpet toward me. After all, it was public information. If I'd had the time before Birdie had gotten sick, I would have no doubt been Googling Clark and his books.
I didn't realize your dad had run for vice president.
Almost, I corrected, though a lot of people made this mistake. He had to drop out before it was official. I looked down and traced a circular pattern on the carpet.
How's he handling all this recent stuff?
Clark asked, and I looked up at him, fixing a smile on my face.
Oh, just fine, I said immediately, reaching for some of the lines Peter had written for me when everything was starting to fall apart. Obviously, it's a time of transition, which is always hard, but...
I looked at Clark, and it was like I suddenly realized where I was. In a laundry room, with a vomiting dog, wearing someone else's clothes, with a boy who was not, to my knowledge, a member of the media. I could, I realized with what felt like a physical shock, tell him the truth. It went against everything I'd been told my whole life, sometimes explicitly, but more often not. It was just what I'd learned, before I knew I was learning it. Stay on message. Don't tell people what you really think or feel, unless it's been vetted and approved. Keep people at arm's length and your feelings to yourself. And I'd done it for years now, until it was second nature. And where had it gotten me? Well, I said slowly, feeling like I was going against a lifetime of training. I'm not sure. It's been... weird. Clark was looking over at me, expectant. I knew other guys would have just nodded, maybe said, bummer, and then we would have moved on, gone back to fooling around, or to safe, easy topics. Topher would have known what I meant and not asked any follow-ups, because none would have been needed. But it seemed like Clark actually wanted to know, that he was waiting for me to go on. He's home, I said, shaking my head. Which he never is. And it's really strange to have him there all the time. And he's not allowed to work, so he's been watching ancient basketball games. My voice trailed off. I wasn't sure I wanted to tell him about the terrible dinner we'd had, and all our awkward silences, which were made that much worse because it was like my dad didn't even notice them. I think he's waiting for the investigation to clear him so he can go back to work. There was a small pause, and Clark nodded, then asked quietly,
And what if he can't? I mean, if it doesn't come back in his favor.
This was the very question I had been trying not to ask myself since it happened. I'm not sure.
Well, what did he do before?
Clark asked, then smiled.
I didn't get that far on his Wikipedia page.
He was a public defender. I could hear the pride in my voice when I said it. I had always liked the idea of it. My dad, helping out the people who couldn't afford their own counsel, righting the wrongs of innocent victims, and a lot of scumbags, too, based on the stories I'd heard.
It was actually how my parents met.
I couldn't quite believe I was saying this, but the words were out before I could stop them. The story the media had was that my parents had met while working together, which was technically true, but without any of the details. She was putting herself through art school, working as a police sketch artist, I said, feeling myself smile even as I had to swallow hard. And my dad was furious that one of her sketches looked exactly like his client, and they started fighting about it. Clark leaned forward.
Did the guy do it?
Stabby Bob, I asked, and Clark laughed. Totally, but it was enough to introduce them. At the farmhouse, a framed sketch of Bob, long white beard, tattoos, a gleam of crazy in his eyes, had hung in the entryway, startling almost everyone who came over. I had no idea where it was now. Like most of my mother's art, it hadn't been hung up in the new place. I assumed he was in storage somewhere, no doubt carefully wrapped, but put away, out of sight. "That's kind of how my parents met, too," Clark said, and I felt my eyebrows raise in surprise. "Well, minus the stabbing guy," he acknowledged. "My dad went to audit a dental practice where my mom was working as a bookkeeper. She'd had the books so organized and could answer every question he threw at her, so he hired her away to work for him."
"So both your parents are accountants?" I asked, and Clark nodded.
"That must have been rough."
"Tell me about it," he said, shaking his head.
Then he looked at me and gave me a smile, like he'd decided something, before going on.
"This one time, I think I was 8, they'd sent me to the store and told me to bring back change. But when I was walking back, I saw a new Batman comic."
As Clark went on telling his story, I realized that I wasn't trying to stop him or control the conversation or keep him from asking me something I didn't want to answer. It was like talking to my friends, and I would just have to see where the conversation took me. And so, surprising myself, I leaned forward to listen.
"Explain it to me," I said. Now that I was, apparently, spending the night in their house, I thought I needed to know a little more about the people who lived there.
"Since you're not Clark Getz Hoffman." Clark winced.
"That's a pretty terrible name," he said, and I silently agreed. "My publisher is Getz. Her soon-to-be ex-husband is Hoffman."
"Got it." I looked at Bertie's water dish, at the BW that was painted there.
"Then what's the W for?"
"Oh," Clark said, giving Bertie a gentle pat. "That's his middle name."
I closed my eyes for a moment. The dog has a middle name?
"Bertie Woofter Getz Hoffman,"
Clark said, raising an eyebrow at me, letting me know he thought this was ridiculous, too.
"Woofter?"
"Yeah," Clark said with a shrug. "It's from a book they liked. The character is Bertie Wooster, so it's like a pun."
"Oh," I said, nodding, remembering the framed book cover I'd seen the first day.
"So the dog has 4 names?" I said, still trying to get this to make sense. Clark gave me a small smile.
"I don't get it either."
"So you write books," I said, shaking some Skittles into my hand. I'd found a half-full bag in my purse, and we'd been sharing them. We were both starting to get tired, and I'd decided we needed some sugar.
"That's so weird," I said, shaking my head. "I mean, you're my age."
"Just a little older," he said, turning so that he was facing me a little more fully, both of us sitting cross-legged on the carpet. "I'm 19.
He held out his hand and I tipped the Skittles into his palm.
"But still," I said around my candy. "That's weird. You have a job."
"You have a job," he pointed out. "If you didn't, you wouldn't be here right now. You'd be off somewhere not reading."
"But you have a career," I said, as Clark gestured to me for more candy. "Isn't that weird?" Clark laughed.
"I guess not to me. I've been doing this for 5 years now, so publishing books is just what I do."
As I watched, his smile faded, the wattage of his dimples dimming slightly.
"It's what I did, at any rate."
"So, you need to give them your third book?" I asked, and he nodded.
"Well, when is it due?"
2 years ago,
Clark said, and I felt my eyes widen.
Yeah, that's pretty much everyone's reaction.
There are a lot of people who are really not happy with me at the moment. But it's coming together. I just need to finesse some things, pull some threads together.
I nodded.
Okay.
I was still trying to process the 2-year delay.
So, do you have a plan? A schedule worked out for when you're going to turn it in?
I saw something pass over Clark's face, but before I could really see what he was thinking, it was gone. And Clark was giving me a smile.
It sounds like you're pretty organized.
I nodded, taking that as a compliment, even though he might not have intended it as one.
It's the coin of the realm in my family.
Clark stared at me.
The what?
I realized a second too late what I'd done. It was an expression my parents always used, and I'd used it enough around my friends that they no longer thought it was strange. But I sometimes forgot that not everyone had heard it before.
Coin of the realm, I repeated. Something that carries the most value.
Oh, Clark said, nodding like he was turning the phrase over in his head.
I like it.
You still haven't answered the question.
Busted.
Clark paused for a moment, like he was gathering his thoughts, then said,
If it were as easy as just getting organized or sticking to a schedule, I'd have done it years ago. But you can't rush these things. Even though I know I'm holding things up. Everyone wants the new book. My publishers keep putting it on the calendar. I'm getting pushback from the people who want another movie. At this point, I don't even think it would matter if it was good, as long as there was something they could put out.
But what's the problem? I asked, beyond glad that medicine didn't have any of these issues. You didn't take an extra long time to do a heart bypass, or tell someone you weren't feeling inspired to fix their brain hemorrhage. You did your job, that was all.
Well, he cleared his throat. In terms of where I am with the third book, it's complicated because in the last one,
he paused and looked up at me for a moment before saying,
I wrapped up Tamsin's story in the end, pretty definitively.
Oh, I said, then paused. But wasn't she your main character?
Ah, he said, pointing at me. Now you're beginning to see what the problem is.
Biggest fear? I asked around a yawn, leaning back against the wall. Clark had gone and gotten us pillows after the Skittle sugar buzz had worn off, and we'd both started to crash. I had a pillow behind my head and one underneath me. We'd tried to get Birdie out to a more comfortable location for us, like one with couches, but he'd just curled more tightly into a ball and made a little moaning sound when we tried to move him, so we decided to leave him where he was. Now that most of the adrenaline and panic had left the situation, I was feeling how late it was. It was starting to feel like 2 a.m. at a slumber party, when everyone is sleepy and a little bit punchy, and usually hopped up on sugar, and you're too tired to tell anything but the truth. That fuzzy, half-awake, honest feeling. It was how we'd found out Bree had kissed her second cousin, by accident, she swore, last summer at a wedding.
Haunted houses,
Clark said around a huge yawn, half muffled by the hand he raised in front of his mouth.
Oh, I said, a little surprised.
But I supposed it stood to reason that if you wrote fantasy novels, you believed in things like ghosts.
Well, I guess that makes sense. Not actual haunted houses, Clark said dismissively. I don't believe in those. I mean the kind they have at Halloween, that you can walk through and people jump out and scare you.
I just looked at him.
That makes less sense.
My parents took me to one when I was like 4. Way too young. It scarred me for life.
He shuddered, like he was reliving something, then turned.